I'm going to go and see how Pendula is making out. Craig began to turn away. But something in the way the captive white man was holding himself alerted him, and he turned back quickly. The white prisoner had used the confusion to unlock the steel cuff from his wrist, and now he hurled the black attaché case across the hold towards the open port. In a reflex action, Craig threw himself to one side, like a basketball player intercepting a pass, and he got a hand to the flying case, deflecting it aside so that it missed the open doorway and clattered against the bulkhead. He dived for it and hugged it to his chest. "This must be a very interesting piece of goods," he observed mildly, as he stood up. "I'd watch that one, Sam. He is as tricky as he is beautiful," he advised. Lugging the case, Craig made his way forward and clambered up into the raised cockpit. He dropped into the co-pilot's seat next to Sally Ann and shrugged out of the pack that contained the diamonds. He wedged it securely beside the seat. "So you can fly this damn thing after all, bird lady." She grinned at him, her teeth very white in her blackened face. "I'm heading back towards the pan where we left the Land Rover."
"Good thinking. How's the fuel?"
"One tank full, the other three quarters. We have plenty in hand." Craig placed the attaché case in his lap and checked the locks. They were combinations.
"How long to the border?" he asked.
"Well, we're making 170 knots. Less than 2 hours. Better than walking home, isn't it?"
"My oath," Craig grinned back at her.
With his clasp knife, he ripped out the combination locks and opened the lid of the attaché case. On top were two spare shirts and a ball of socks, a bottle of Russian vodka half full, a cheap wallet containing four passports, Finnish, Swedish, East German and Russian, airline tickets for Aeroflot.
"Well-travelled gentlemen."
Craig unscrewed the top of the vodka bottle and took a swig.
He said, "That's the real stuff."
He passed the bottle to Sally Ann and lifted the shirts. Under them were three green-covered folders. They were stamped with Cyrillic lettering and black hammer and sickle crests.
"Russian, by God, the man's a Bolshe."
He opened the top folder, and his interest quickened.
"It's typed in English."
He read the top page, and became gradually immersed in the contents. He did not even look up when Sally Ann asked,
"What does it say?"
He skimmed through the first file, and then the other two. 25 minutes later, he looked up with a stunned, bemused expression and stared unseeingly through the windshield.
"I can hardly believe it," he shook his head. "They were so damn sure of themselves, they even typed it out in clear English for Peter Fungerbearer's benefit. No attempt at concealing it. They didn't even bother to use code names."
"What is it?" Sally Ann glanced sideways at him.
"It just boggles the mind."
He took another mouthful of vodka.
"Sam has got to read these."
He stood up, and balancing against the lurch and surge of the helicopter, he dropped down into the hold and hurried back to Tungata. Tungata and Sarah sat opposite the two hostages. Tungata had used the spare seat belts to truss them securely at wrists and ankles. Peter Fungerbearer seemed to have recovered a little, and he and Tungata were glaring at each other, arguing with the acrimony and deadly concentration of mortal enemies.
"Cool that."
Craig dropped onto the bench beside Tungata.
"Give me the Uzi."
Craig took it from him.
"Now read what's in here."
He placed the attaché case on Tungata's lap.
"Delighted to meet you, Colonel Bukharin,"
Craig said pleasantly.
"You must be happy to be missing the Moscow winter."
He pointed the Uzi at his belly.
"I am a senior member of the diplomatic corps of the United Soviet..."
"Yes, Colonel, I've read your visiting card."
Craig indicated the files.
"On the other hand, I, Colonel, am a desperate fugitive, quite capable of doing you a serious injury if you don't shut up."
Then he turned to Peter Fungerbearer.
"I do hope you're looking after King's Lynn properly, remembering to wipe your feet and all that."
"You escaped me once, Mr. Mello," Peter Fungerbearer said softly. "I don't make the same mistakes twice."
And despite the gun in his hands, and the fact that Peter was trussed up like a sacrificial goat, Craig felt a chilly little breeze of fear down his spine, and he could not go on holding the smouldering gaze of hatred with which Peter Fungerbearer fixed him. He glanced sideways at Tungata. he was skimming quickly through the green files. And as he read, his expression changed from disbelief to outrage.
"Do you know what this is, Pufo?"
"It's a blueprint for bloody revolution," Craig nodded. "Written out in plain English, obviously for the benefit of Peter Funga-bearer."
"Everything. They cover everything. Look at this. The lists of those to be executed, they spell out the names, and those who can be relied on to collaborate. They have even prepared the radio and television announcements for the day of the coup."
"Page 25, Craig suggested. "Just check that." Tungata turned to it.
"Me?" He read on. "Sent to a clinic in Europe, mind-bending treatment, the mindless traitor to lead the Matabele peoples into perpetual slavery."
"Yes, Sam. You were the pivot on which the whole operation turned. When Funga-bearer lost you in the cavern, when he dynamited the Grand Gallery, he admitted defeat. Just look at him now."
However, Tungata was no longer listening. He dumped the attaché case and its contents back in Craig's lap and leaned forward until his face was a foot from Funga-bearer's. He thrust forward that craggy lantern jaw and slowly his eyeballs glazed over with the reddish sheen of rage.
"You would sell this land and all its peoples into a new slavery, into an imperialism that would make the rule of Smith's regime appear benign and altruistic by comparison. You would condemn your own tribe and mine and all the others. Madness!"
In his rage, Tungata was becoming incoherent.
"A rabid dog, crazy with the lust for power."
Suddenly he roared involuntarily, giving vent to his anguish and hatred and outrage. He hurled himself at Peter Funga-bearer and seized the wide nylon strap that bound him. With the other hand, he unclipped the huge Shona's seatbelt and jerked him off the bench. With the strength of a wounded buffalo bull, he swung him bodily across the hold towards the square open port in the fuselage.
"Mad dog!" he roared.
And before Craig could move, he had thrust Peter Funga-bearer backwards through the opening. Craig tossed the Uzi to Sarah and sprang to Tungata's side. Tungata had been dragged to his knees by the weight of Peter Funga-bearer's body, and he was clinging with one arm to the jamb of the doorway. With the other hand, he still had a grip on the strap around Peter's chest. Peter Funga-bearer dangled outboard. His hands were strapped helpless, his neck twisted back so that he stared up into Tungata's face above him. The fierce brown hills of Africa lay 2,000 feet below him, the black stone crests bared like the teeth of a man-eating shark.
"Sam, wait!"
Craig screamed above the wind roar and the deafening beat of the engine.
"Die, you treacherous, murderous!" Tungata roared down into Peter Funga-bearer's upturned face.
Craig had never seen such naked terror as that in Peter Funga-bearer's dark eyes. His mouth was wide open, and the wind blew his spittle over his lips in silver strings, but no sound came from his throat.
"Wait, Sam!" Craig screamed. "Don't kill him! He is the only one who can clear you, can clear all of us. If you kill him, you'll never be able to live in Zimbabwe again."
Tungata rolled his head sideways and stared at Craig.
"Our only chance to clear ourselves."
The red glaze of rage began to fade from Tungata's eyes, but the muscles stood out in his arms from the effort of holding Peter Funga-bearer's body against the whip and buffet of the wind.
"Help me," he grated.
And in one movement, Craig snatched the safety belt, pulling it off the inertia reel and buckled it around his own waist. He dropped belly down on the deck, hooked his ankles around the base of the bench, and reached down and out to get a double grip on the nylon strap. Between them, they lifted Peter Funga-bearer back into the port, and his legs were so rubbery with terror that they could not bear his weight when he tried to stand. Tungata hurled him backwards across the cabin, and Peter hit the rear bulkhead. He slid down it and rolled onto his side, pulling up his knees into a fetal position, and under the crushing weight of defeat and capitulation, he moaned quietly and covered his head with both arms. Craig climbed unsteadily up into the cockpit and sank into the co-pilot's seat.
"What the hell is happening?" Sally Ann demanded.
"Oh, nothing serious. I only just managed to stop Sam killing Peter Funga-bearer."
"Why did you bother?"
Sally Ann raised her voice above the clatter of the rotors overhead.
I'd love a shot at that swine myself. Darling, can you get a radio connection to the United States Embassy in Harare? She thought about it. Not from this aircraft. Give them the registration of the Cessna. I'll lay odds it hasn't been reported missing yet. I'll have to go through Johannesburg Approach. They're the only station with sufficient range. I don't care how. Just get Morgan Oxford on the blower. Johannesburg Approach Radio responded promptly to Sally Ann's call and accepted her call sign with equanimity. Report your position, Kilo Yankee Alpha. Northern Botswana, Sally Ann anticipated by an hour's flying time. En route Francistown to Maun. What is the number you wish to connect in Harare? Person to person with the cultural attaché Morgan Oxford at the United States Embassy. I'm sorry, I don't know the number. Hold on. And in less than a minute, Morgan Oxford spoke through the static. Oxford here, who is this? Sally Ann passed the microphone to Craig, and he held it to his lips and depressed the transmit button. Morgan, it's Craig, Craig Mello. Holy shit, Morgan's voice became strident. Where the hell are you? All hell is breaking out. Where is Sally Ann? Morgan, listen, this is deadly serious. How would you like to interrogate a full colonel of Russian intelligence, complete with his files of planned Russian aggression in and destabilization of the southern half of the African continent? There was nothing but the hum of static for many seconds, and then Morgan said, "Wait 10." The wait seemed much longer than 10 seconds, and then Morgan came back. "Don't say anything else, just give me a rendezvous point." "These are the map references." Craig read off the map coordinates that Sally Ann had scribbled down for him. "There's an emergency landing strip there. I will light a signal fire. How long for you to get there?" "Wait 10. This time it was shorter. "Dawn, tomorrow." "Understood," Craig acknowledged. "We'll be waiting." "Over and out," he handed the microphone back to Sally Ann. "Border crossing in 43 minutes, she told him. "That mud pack suits you. I'm beginning to think it's an improvement. And you, beautiful, are a racing certainty for the cover of Vogue." She blew the hair off her nose and stuck her tongue out at him.